So for our final talk in this track, we've got a tag team combination. He's the group manager for NIST Security Testing, Validation, and Measurement Group, responsible for the Personal Identity Verification Validation Program, the Security Content Automation Protocol Validation Program, wrapping my mouth around all of these, the Cryptographic Algorithm Validation Program, and the Cryptographic Module Validation Program. She has served in a variety of positions in the National Security Agency, including technical advisor to the Office of Community Outreach, subject matter expert in developing COTS for Secret that turned into the Commercial Solutions for Classified program. She was the branch chief for the Trusted Product Evaluation Program and began with NSA working on key management and systems evaluations. Please join me in welcoming Michael Cooper, who's so secret that we couldn't even find a picture of him, so you may have to avert your eyes and not look at him, and Janine Peterson, the director of NIAP.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for sticking around to hear the talk. I know it's late on a Friday afternoon. It's a beautiful day out there. We will try and get you out of here at a reasonable time so you don't hit too much traffic. Mike and I wanted to do this talk to explain a little bit about what we've been working on over about the last 18 months. We have been collaborating quite extensively. I know you've seen some of the changes perhaps in NIAP, so we wanted to just kind of give you an idea of what we're doing together and where we envision moving this forward in the future. So this is what we're going to cover. We're going to talk a little bit about the NIST NIAP collaboration, some of the international standards and the agreements that we have, also talk a little bit about automation and some of the tools that we're using to improve our processes and gain some efficiencies. Before I get started, though, I did want to mention over there, we have a new NIAP deputy director, Mary Baish. For those of you who have worked in NIAP, you will recognize Mary as instrumental in doing a lot of our protection profiles and doing all your entropy analysis reporting from an IAD perspective. Mary has joined the NIAP team as my deputy, thank heavens, and I just wanted to announce it because apparently we thought we had told everybody, but this is a surprise to many. So we're very excited to have Mary on board. She brings a wealth of experience from IAD, a lot of crypto knowledge, and so we're very lucky to have her. So, okay. So what I want to talk about a little bit here is the collaboration that we've been doing. Mike and I and our teams have been working together quite extensively. We meet on a regular basis, go through issues. We have very good communication on tactical issues that come up as well as planning strategically for the future. Our goal here, as you know, NIAP is the National Information Assurance Partnership. So we have been working diligently to kind of reinvigorate that partnership between NIST and NSA, which was the foundation of NIAP. We want to eliminate some of the testing duplications. Those of you who are labs here know that there's overlap between the NIAP Common Criteria Test Labs and the NIST labs. We'd like to get to the point where the work conducted in either part of a lab is recognized by the other. So in other words, we clearly recognize what's done in the NIST CSTs and then vice versa as well. So evaluation activities conducted in NIAP would also be recognized ultimately in the NIST CAVP, CMVP processes. So that's our goal. That's where we would like to get to. We're not there yet, but we are making progress, and that's what we want to talk about a little bit. What you have seen, I know, in some of the CMVP annexes is pointers to protection profiles for assurances that are gathered in the environment. We are in the process of working with NIST to update some of those pointers because some of them are pointing to obsolete protection profiles. We get calls about that on a regular basis, so that is something that we're working on. And we also are in the process of aligning the NIAP protection profiles with the CMVP derived test requirements and the IGs as well. So these are areas that we believe kind of dovetail nicely. We're trying to make sure that we are in alignment, that we're, you know, not contradicting each other and that we're supporting in what we're doing. This is kind of an important point that we like to make, that NIST, the CAVP and CMVP kind of focuses on the lower layers, the algorithms, the cryptographic algorithms, and the modules in which those algorithms are embedded. NIAP is working at a layer above that, in an abstract way, and we see these programs as complementary. We see them working together. You've seen recently that we've published, in NIAP, we've published a crypto policy within the last year or so, talking about how we rely on the CAVP and CMVP processes to give credit with the NIAP Common Criteria Evaluation. This is kind of an example of leveraging that stack concept. And as I mentioned also, we've been working on, in the module environment, what do we point to with respect to our NIAP protection profiles to give a little additional, assurance there. And then also, I guess what we're talking about here, that last bullet is sort of where we are right now. So within NIAP, we've published the policy that says, okay, if you have a CAVP certificate, you can get credit for, a certain set of protection profile requirements, assurance activities. Likewise, if you have a CMVP, you get a little bit more from that. So certainly we have taken steps, concrete steps, public steps to say, this is what you get. If you come to us, with your CMVP certificate, you're going to get, X amount of credit in your common criteria evaluation conducted in NIAP. That policy also mandates a CAVP certificate, in order to get a NIAP certificate. Ultimately, we're going to get to a CMVP certificate. We're not there yet, though. So that's kind of some of the complementary things that we've got going.
All right. So the next couple of slides are probably more on the NIST side of the discussion. Obviously, a lot of talk has been going on at this conference about NIST's position with regard to our adoption of an international standard, the ISO 19790, and then the associated document, which is the derived test requirements, which is ISO 24759. We are expecting to do that. We have gotten all of the feedback from the Federal Register notice. We are adjudicating the feedback. We're going to be posting the public, basically what our response to that feedback is within the next month. And then prior to the end of the year, I was just talking to my boss, Matt, about this the other day, that we will give a recommendation to the Department of Commerce more or less NIST's recommendation to Commerce that we go ahead and adopt the ISO standard. So based on that, though, the big reason for doing this for us is to, help the adoption of standards that are internationally based so that vendors can get their products evaluated once against those standards and have them be able to be used anywhere in the world that is using those same basic standards. So the presumption there being, and I think I'll talk about this next, is that, one way or the other, in order to do that, we have to modify some of the standards that we currently have. So obviously we still have a FIPS 140-2. We'll have to create a 140-3 in order to point to the ISO standard. One way or the other, we don't get within the U.S. government. We can't, more or less just adopt the ISO standard without having our own FIPS standard, as the precedent, if you will. So that will have to be, we've already got written in draft form. We more or less just have to, as a part of the sending it up to Department of Commerce, we'll be submitting that document. The document itself really doesn't have much in the way of text other than just the reference to the ISO standard. That being said, the FIPS document that exists today, the 140-2, has all of the appendices such that each of the appendices point to the U.S.-based algorithmic standards. So in the ISO document, those are ISO standards, and we would be overriding those ISO references with U.S.-based algorithm standards. So we would be pointing to our own SPs and FIPS for each one of the algorithms. And then we would also have to redo our management manual and our implementation guidance to make sure to be consistent with the ISO standard. So, this one's yours.
So we're back and back forth. Common criteria standard 15408, the ISO standard there. As Mike mentioned, our goal here is allowing vendors to evaluate their product once and sell it in many nations. So that's kind of the theme of the CCRA. In the US, we link the common criteria to procurement. Not all nations do that, but we do. So at least for national security systems, we mandate the use of common criteria evaluated products. So one of the things that we've made good progress with is the development of collaborative protection profiles. These are developed in international technical communities, which can be industry, government representatives, end users who use these evaluated products to come together and define a set of security requirements and associated test activities. So these are all ways that we are, trying to, span the globe here with the development of the requirements and the test activities. The other thing that we're working on and have been for, close to the last 9 months or so is cryptographic requirements. So we have a working group in the CC committee that is working together to define cryptographic standards that would be applied within these collaborative protection profiles. So some of these requirements that would, meet the needs for many different nations. And that's the goal here with this working group, is to come together as governments, define what cryptographic protocols we're interested in, what the cryptographic requirements are that are common across the membership, and then use those in the collaborative protection profiles. The other thing is, it brings nations together to kind of represent their own requirements and what crypto they're interested in, so that it can be reflected in these collaborative protection profiles.
Okay. So, a couple of words about how NIST wants to work its international agreements, at least to start with. Right now, NIST is not a part of CC directly. I mean, through our interactions with NIAP, we've gone to the ICCC conference this year, and we're planning on continuing to interact with CC, but not as members ourselves. We're just kind of, working with NIAP on that. But so that being said, we're not necessarily looking to, be a part of the CCRA per se. So we're envisioning that we're going to need to create agreements with other nations on a one-by-one basis based on our trust model of working with those validation authorities that are out there. We've already got a couple of countries that have been talking to us over the last few years that we know that we definitely want to sign agreements with, but obviously it'll be based on after the ISO standard is signed. It didn't make a lot of sense to us to have international agreements and do testing when we don't even agree on the same standard. So once that's in place, we'll be looking to sign some of those agreements with other countries. We're going to have to make sure, based on a lot of back and forth between vendors, labs, and NIST in terms of us setting up kind of the legal framework for us receiving some of the test results that includes intellectual property from many of the vendors. They asked for very specific language to be in our agreements. And so in our dealings with our legal department, we've made sure that they understand that whatever international agreements we put in place, it has to include the same intellectual property protections. So that being said, when we, say for example, we have an agreement with Japan, if a vendor comes to us and says, well, you guys can do the validation on this, you know, we would ask the vendor as a part of our process, probably at the very beginning of the process, when they contact the lab, to make a determination as to which validating authorities they're interested in working with, and we would hold to that portion of the agreement. We would only share any intellectual property based on whatever the needs of that vendor are. After that, so we're going to make those agreements based on the idea that, you know, they have NVLAP-based labs, they perform processes in a similar fashion to us, and that, you know, when they do a review, you know, the type of review that they do, we're going to gain some experience over time in you know, and trust that they're looking at the review in a similar fashion to us. So, and the last bullet is just basically what I said at the beginning, is that we don't want to put these agreements in place to where it implies that if another validating authority validates something, that the U.S. automatically has to take it. We want to collaborate as much as possible and you know, make sure all the requirements for all the different countries that are working on these agreements are you know, getting as close together as possible. But at the same time, we don't want to have that expectation that just because another country validates something that we're automatically going to. So.
Okay. So one of the points that I've heard a lot lately, I know I heard this at ICCC, and I've heard it within the last, you know, several months, is the notion of WTO technical barriers to trade. And when we look at this from an IAP and in support with NIST and their FIPS, one of the things we consider is, are there duplicative standards out there? So when I'm looking at a common criteria protection profile, for instance, for a specific technology, does there already exist a protection profile for that technology? And, you know, how can we merge so that we come up with one sane set of requirements, not multiple sets of requirements that vendors have to jump through hoops and consumers don't know which set of requirements they should look at? So we're really trying to pull that together within the common criteria recognition arrangement, where we come together, we define a set of requirements that make sense for a technology, and all the nations are on board with that. That's the goal of you know, the revised CCRA that we implemented last year. I've already talked about the technical community. One of the things, I guess, that I would say is that we're also looking for, within the common criteria recognition arrangement, for it to set a baseline standard or norm for what makes sense for evaluating commercial technologies. One of the things that we've learned over the last however many years of using the common criteria, there seems to be a discrepancy of, do you need source code to really do a good job of evaluating a product? Do you not need source code? You know, in the U.S., and that's part of what we've led in the charge, is, well, you know, source code doesn't necessarily bias anything. That unconstrained search for vulnerabilities, you know, the return on investment there is not commensurate with the assurance that you get. So these are all kinds of things that play well within an international realm in setting a norm that is reasonable, but yet still provides assurance for the end consumers of these products to make sure that, yes, we're doing due diligence in evaluating these products, but that doesn't mean that we have to get our hands on every bit of vendor's IP that's out there. So that's important from a NIAP and a U.S. perspective. We talk to our U.S. trade representatives about this kind of thing quite frequently, just ensuring that within NIAP, with NIST and the FIPS, that we're not creating unnecessary barriers to trade, that we're always kind of conscious that we want to do something that's internationally friendly and amenable to, you know, to a vendor, that they could evaluate their product and get it recognized. So that's kind of a cornerstone or a key aspect of this whole common criteria recognition arrangement. And also with the NIAP and NIST partnership, is ensuring that we really are you know, trying to avoid any kind of duplication there that might be perceived or real.
So with regard to automation, one of the, we've talked in a few of the sessions yesterday and today about the fact that CMVP has stood up a new automated system to be able to manage our own workflow, and we hope that's really going to bring, you know, an awful lot of efficiencies to our process. We're still going to keep working on this. We're going to be adding new capabilities with regard to CAVP. We're next going to be working on a public-facing portal in order to actually interact with the labs and the vendors more directly. And there's an awful lot of discussion as to the types of functionality that we can add. But one of the reasons I had this on here was because there are opportunities there to possibly take advantage of in terms of the interaction between NIST and NIAP, in that if a vendor is going through both programs, there may be ways in which the two systems can interact in a way that actually helps the vendor get their data from the FIPS system directly over into the NIAP system. So we'll definitely be talking with NIAP and MITRE, but we're going to probably need to talk to the labs and the vendors as well to make sure that, you know, they're okay with this concept of us sharing data between the two systems.
And then this is just the NIAP plug. All of our labs know this. I think many of our vendors know this as well. We've had a support tool in place for over a year now. We constantly are looking to improve it, to improve its capabilities. It allows us secure data upload and document upload to a secure website. It certainly has helped us with making our process more efficient, with information sharing, with knowledge sharing, and that kind of thing. Our next great thing to be revealed or unveiled, I guess, is the technical rapid response teams. These are teams that we've formed around a particular protection profile. So we have a team for each protection profile that exists to answer questions, to clarify requirements or test cases. And so we do have, that's under development right now, is a tool that will help us become more efficient, because those of you who have submitted questions via RTRRTs have seen probably over the last 6 months that it's not a 48-hour turnaround on a regular basis. We have a huge volume of questions coming in, and so we are trying to get more efficient with that. How do we answer these questions? And ultimately, we see that evolving over to an international technical community for those collaborative protection profiles. So we feel like anything we can do in the U.S. that would help to underpin the work that's going to be conducted in the international technical communities is a win just for us, but also for the CCRA in general. So, you know, I would say certainly the NIAP turnaround on completing evaluations, we've made great strides. There's still more work to be done there, but the tool kind of, the support tools underpin all of the successes that we've had so far. You know how to get us. This is just our obligatory slide to give you our contact information. And with that, we'll open it up to questions if you have any. Yes.
How is that rapid response team going to integrate with international technical community?
That's a good question. So the question was, how will the NIAP rapid response teams integrate into the international technical communities? And so what we see, in fact, I just saw an email that went out, or a you know, posting about for the network device international technical community. We envision that nations that are using the collaborative protection profiles, you know, the first time or, you know, first several times through, individual schemes will make decisions for that particular evaluation, you know, for questions that come up on a collaborative protection profile. That then will be turned into the ITC for them to adjudicate and consider on the basis of, you know, putting out technical decisions or some kind of public statements, or it will also feed into updates. So I would say that we have experience with, you know, technical rapid response teams. We're certainly, you know, happy to share that experience with the ITCs, but ultimately it is up to any given ITC to determine how they're going to adjudicate and address comments that come up on collaborative protection profiles. Other questions? Matt.
So I did have a question. Actually, my question is about the NIST international agreements.
Okay.
So I'm trying to follow it through to its logical conclusion to make sure I understood what the goal was. If you're sharing the data from the CMVP's evaluation with the other nations, is the goal then to have those other nations also then issue a ISO 19790 type of cert saying, yes, we got that data, and therefore now you've gone one evaluation and you have certificates from multiple nations?
Yes, I mean, so this is obviously bi-directional, so depending on which country starts and does the validation first, they would do their validation, and then whoever was second in that queue would use the same data and review the test results, hopefully the same way, and come to an agreement based on the validation information that was passed between those two countries. That's the intent.
Okay.
So if there's more than three or four countries agreeing, to share this data right off the bat, what we envision is that, we would have an opportunity for a vendor to choose. We would tell the vendors, these are the countries we have agreements with. If you choose all, that's fine. If you choose just some of them, that's fine. But whatever that list is, we would share the results of your testing with that country. They would have the opportunity to do the validation alongside of us, kind of the same way that we share those results with Canada today.
Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess
right. Really
there's a number of nations that have kind of started looking at the ISO 19790. There could be a web, I guess, of different bilateral arrangements where
yes. Vendors
need to be aware. You go to this country and it opens these options. You go to this country, there's these options and so forth.
Right.
Okay. The last question I had then is what you're envisioning truly bidirectional then? So an evaluation done in other country XYZ, not US, are you envisioning that you would CMVP would issue a cert with the same test data from other country?
Yes, if we have established an agreement with another country and we have built a trust relationship with that particular country's validation authority, that we would take their validation results and we would review them a second time for the US, and if we agree with everything that they put in their validation, we would do a validation of our own based on the results that they had.
Okay, so there's the possibility of going through the data and finding different conclusions or different issues than another scheme would.
Yes.
Or another government agency
and
would.
Not agreeing, yes.
Okay.
Sure.
And potentially some type of split where maybe it's a documentation change or whatever, but there's things being done for one country that weren't necessarily done for another. But ultimately, you're
right.
Still got one set of testing that was done that could issue two certs.
Yes. And so to the extent that we can keep that to a minimum, that's actually the goal, obviously. We want to leave room for the possibility that if a country does a validation that we don't agree with the efficacy of that validation, we don't have to necessarily just agree, as a matter of course.
So I'm just thinking this all through, and I'm sorry if I'm dominating this, but I have one more question on this, which would be then, is it possible then that you would end up potentially failing or not accepting the overall certificate, or there'd be additional testing needed then above and beyond? So if something wasn't working for CMVP, you could also say, oh, well, now you need to do some other testing.
It's possible. I mean, so this is all a very new thing. I mean, obviously, Janine's got a lot more experience in this area than we do. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try to learn as we go. So we're going to have a few agreements to start with. We're going to work out the mechanics and see what works, what doesn't work. And hopefully we don't end up with too many of those kinds of situations where we disagree with our partners. I'd be silly if I said that the possibility didn't exist. So.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry, I want to answer a question because it's related.
Yeah.
So for the that to work, would the labs in the other country be accredited by their local accreditation system and validation authority, do you see?
So
because you had mentioned
NVLAB.
NVLAB,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Accreditation required.
Well, right. So that's one of the thoughts that we have that we're going to have to build into these agreements. Right now, one of the things that we believe would give us a fair amount of trust in that other validation authority would be their oversight of their labs. There are international agreements that NVLAP has with other countries. As long as their lab oversight is recognized by NVLAP, we think that would be a good step in the right direction.
Yep.
Considering that some other countries may have additional crypto algorithms or replacement crypto mm-hmm. algorithms,
Yeah. I don't know that we've got it all figured out either, but I would presume that there would be a superset of tests being done by a laboratory that where some of the tests would be pertinent to one country and the other tests would be pertinent to the other country. And so you would turn in the test results for all of the above, and then, you know, each of the constituent countries would look at those tests that they were interested in, just conceptually. So, yeah, exactly.
I'll
so,
wrestle you for it.
Yeah, right. So that's exactly the reason that we started meeting was exactly that issue, was to make sure that we looked at our processes and, you know, to the extent possible, removing duplication of effort, making sure that we're pointing to the same sets of standards, that the testing requirements in one program, you know, fit for the other. You know, there's a fair amount of analysis right now going into, you know, how the protection profiles compare to the DTR, and, you know, what actually matches, what delta there is. So to the extent that we continue to work towards making sure that the two programs fit, you know, closely together, I think that's exactly what the partnership is geared to do.
Right, and I would just add, too, that we do have frequent communication. So, Josh, you know, as an example, we have heard for years about that outdated protection profile reference, and that is something that, you know, we're actively working that. And also, as we're developing our NIAP, you know, as we were developing our NIAP cryptographic policy, and we're starting to be more stringent in what security targets need to say about CAVP certificates or CMVP certificates, adding a level of granularity there, which we did not have before. That's also helping us to uncover areas that need to be strengthened or improved in both programs. So I think just by virtue of the fact that we are raising awareness, that we are talking and collaborating on a regular basis, it's gradually raising the bar, you know, in both programs, and just making sure that there's actual, you know, rigor to what we're doing and what we're mandating.
Not at this time. Right now, our primary focus is still to continue to point to U.S.-based algorithms. Even when there are ISO standards that are roughly written around the same algorithms, I don't know that we're quite there yet. I mean, we've talked about it, but I don't know that we have the desire to move that far yet. Yes.
I'm a similar vein to our
program. Yes, that's actually the intent of internationalizing some of these programs, is so that we actually start working with some of these other validation authorities around the world, and if they have expertise that we don't, we'd love to, you know, work with them on it and adopt, you know, anything that's rational.
Um,
Yeah, we have thought about it. So basically the quick and easy answer to that is whatever the lab sends into us is what we would be forwarding on to another validating authority. So, but if there are concerns there from a vendor or lab perspective, please let us know, and we'll definitely try to figure out how to split out what's the appropriate data to be shared and you know, other data that's not.
Obviously not that.
Right, obviously not.
Anything else? Other questions?
Yep. One more question. Uh-huh. Now that both NIST and NIAP do an entropy assessment reports, is there any way for situations where one agency already completed review can be counted for another one?
Yeah, we'd love to get there.
Sure.
Believe me, we would love to be there. And that's something that we are actively discussing right now. In fact, we were at NIST just recently just kind of talking about, all right, how are we going to handle entropy, what makes sense for that. So certainly that's on our roadmap of how we're going to align there. Because we agree that, you know, entropy is one of those areas that it's critical. Obviously, it's the heart. But we want to try and avoid as much thrashing that we see going on right now. So it is something we're working.